It was just 2 years ago that we welcomed Lenny Castro to Inside Music Cast for the first time. Little did we know that in this short span of time since that interview, that he would embark on creating the tracks that would become his debut solo album, Hands of Silk and Stone. The album was released over the weekend on digital download sites such as iTunes and Amazon Music, and also appears on streaming platforms like Spotify and Apple Music. So what musical path did Lenny take in creating this new project, and what musicians did he enlist? Let's find out. Joining us once again to discuss his debut album, Hands of Silk and Stone, is our good friend, Lenny Castro. Hey, Lenny, welcome back to the show.
Lenny.
Thanks for having me again. I can't believe you guys actually gluttoned for punishment, I guess.
Yeah, we were really bored. We said, hey, let's get Lenny. No.
Yeah, right. He's an
ugly head. He will spark us back up again. Hey.
Of course. I have that way, that charisma.
Hey, well, let's just start out by saying that, first of all, that we're glad that we're not here to talk about, the work that you're doing for somebody else's album. Instead, we're here to talk about your debut album, which is, that's exciting. And it's called Hands of Silk and Stone. And, after all these years of working for other people, so how does it feel that you're revealing this new project really soon? How do you feel about that?
It's very bizarre, very new, very fresh, very unusual.
Yeah.
You know, it's literally the old saying, being on the other side of the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and on top of it, I'm doing it all myself. I mean, there's no record company or any manager or any agent or anything like that. I'm just in there just doing it. You know, I wrote a bunch of music and, the wife said, well, it's time to do something with this. Mm-hmm. And I just said, okay, fine. And then just jumped right into the pool.
Yeah.
You know, it is a very different, it's strange. It is different and strange, feels strange.
Well, we also know that, you've been really busy these past few years, not only with your touring and recording with Toto, but, you've managed to find time to collaborate with, always with other artists, Jennifer Williams.
Yeah, by the grace of God, I still get calls to do sessions here and there.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not as many as they used to be, but I still do get calls and people now send me files.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are like, how things have changed so much. Sure. So now I get, some people just send me their files and I throw some percussion on and send it right back, That's the way things are these days.
Yes. So with this in mind, how did you happen to carve out some time out of the schedule for the writing of the new project, but was the time factor a difficult thing for you?
No, I was writing whenever I'd be sitting down in front of the television. First of all, I have to give serious props to GarageBand, and the GarageBand. I wrote everything basically on GarageBand.
Wow, interesting. That's great.
Should have had. I mean, it's one of those, like I've said to other people, the immediacy of getting things from your gray matter to your hands to immediate response and hearing it, like in the old days, you would have to have a setup. You'd have to have a piano, and then guys were writing on charts, or you have a tape recorder, things like that. But now it's just, you have your pad. I used my iPad. I had a GarageBand on there.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I'd be sitting down, maybe in front of the television, I just get these ideas, and one thing just leads to another.
Yeah.
Once you start an idea, it just keeps on, it perpetuates, it keeps on going until it's done, until it's born.
Yeah.
So on planes, in hotel rooms, anywhere, middle of the night, wake up, I got that bass part. Jump up, turn the thing on, bring up the tune, and get that idea out of there right away so you can go back to sleep.
Yeah.
I'm one of those kind of guys, once things germinate in my head, I can't stop until it's done.
Yeah.
I can't stop.
Yeah. Well, like Eddie mentioned at the start of the show, you've been in the business for such a long time. You've played so many sessions and played on so many albums and projects for other artists for years and years.
I've been very lucky, man.
But I guess my question is, though, is how long have you been kicking around this idea of doing your own album?
Oh, this has been kicking around for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, 6, 7 years, maybe 10 years, maybe longer.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then, like I said, I just finally, once I got the thing, once I got a hold of GarageBand and I got my grips on it and figured out how to work it, my muse just started hitting me over the head. over and over again. Yeah. Just for like 5 years straight, just right.
You
know?
You've always said that good percussion is something that you can add almost to any style of music and to make it better. So how did this approach with this new project, how did you approach it stylistically? I mean, what did you have in mind?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I wanted to make, since I am a percussionist, drummer percussionist, I didn't want to make an album that was just about percussion. You know, yeah, right. I was writing all these great songs in these tunes. So I say, people already know I play percussion. I didn't want it to turn out to be a world music. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but I didn't want it to be like a world music type of thing where it's just kind of nebulous music, you know, you're showing some percussion here, I learned this there. I wanted it really to come from my heart, you know, the sheer groove of writing music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I didn't want it to be a percussionist per se album.
Yeah.
So in almost a way, percussion's kind of almost taking a back seat. I just wanted to present myself.
Yeah.
You know, this is my entrance and my introduction to being a artist. And many people have called me an artist already, but I don't wear that nomenclature well. Now I can. Now that I have my own project, you know, I can call myself an artist.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know, with conviction.
Yeah. Well, on this album, Hands of Silk and Stone, you know, you're not only performing percussion, but you know you're playing drums, you're playing keyboards, you're playing synth, and even you're singing. So this must have been really fun for you, right?
Oh, it was. It was a lot of fun to be doing all these things, especially to be singing. I'd never sang. Well, first of all, I never wrote lyrics. I never wrote any lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
The lyrics were. Yeah. I don't know. The lyrics came from. Yeah, basically the lyrics came from just some little anecdotes about me and Joe Sample.
Joe Sample.
And that's how it came about. And that was the first time I ever wrote some lyrics. And I had a hard time trying to fit things in and figuring it out. I talked to a lot of friends, Vinny Poncia and Joe Williams and some other, you know, people who are into lyrics and writing stuff. And, you know, who was it that told me? Just tell a story. I think it was David Pace. He just told me, just tell a story.
Right.
Don't worry about rhyming or all this. You know, being cute and shit. Just tell the story, and it'll fit, and it will fit into the song on its own. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what it did. You know, so it was my first lyric, my first lead vocal. I mean, I've done vocals before, background vocals, but not a lead step out.
A little later, we're going to talk about those lyrics and the track that you're talking about. But we've got a few more questions before we dive into the songs.
Go right ahead.
You know, you obviously had a vision for the tracks you created, but when you incorporate so many amazing musicians like you did on this album to perform on these tracks, you know, how liberal were you in allowing them to take their performances to places that maybe you hadn't intended? I mean, you know, did you let guys like, you had guys like Luke and Michael Landau and David Page and Creechy, David Garfield and other cats that you invited to the party, did you let them loose to explore?
Yeah, well, you know, basically I had the parts, like I said, I did everything on GarageBand, so I came up with all the parts, even the guitar parts, but I had to replace them because, you know, the guitar sounds on GarageBand, you know, they ain't real guitars.
Right.
But they serve their purpose.
Right.
And so when I sent things out to, especially like to Landau or George Evans, you know, I told them, these are my parts. Have fun with them. You know, just put your love on it. But these are my parts. These are the parts that I would like.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to add some extra love to it, then that's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and things like, you know, solo here, don't solo there, or what's going on in the song so they know where to go. A few instructions, not too much. You send it to the right guy, they hear it, they pretty much know exactly what you know what to do.
Yeah.
Most of the time. So you let them go. But you know, I mean, like I said, when I sent out the songs to them, the files to them, they all had, you know, they all had keyboard parts. And a lot of them I said either replace or just add. And a lot of my keyboard parts stood up in the mix. So I left a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, the main thing is sending the files to the right person.
Yeah.
And just giving them a little bit of instruction. I didn't want to, you know, be like, okay, play that note or send a chart, you know. Forget the chart thing. You know, it's like, these guys got ears. My boys got ears and hearts.
Yeah, that's
right. You know?
Yeah. But, you know, when right before we started the interview, Eddie and I were talking about the album and you know, the fact you had some – obviously you had Michael Landau and Steve Lukather on here, two of the greatest guitar players around. But the one thing Eddie and I talked about was, like, say, on the track that Steve Lukather played on. And when you were kind enough to send us the file so we could take a listen to this before we interviewed you, I just listened through. I wasn't looking at the liner notes. I was in my car and you know, I just knew – that it was Michael Landau, yeah. And I just knew that it was Steve Lukather. Those guys have such a distinct way of playing, and you know what you're going to get from them. And, you know, well, actually don't. I mean, they can take things in many different directions, but still they've got their own signature.
That's what I did with Lukather. With Lukather, basically, I just wanted his sugar on stuff. I didn't want to lock him in. You know, Doug Bossi did most of the guitars on most of the album. Helped me a lot with a lot of the sounds and stuff like that on Big Meat. But on that tune, you're talking about El Tres with Lukather on it. You know, I mean, Lukather, I just wanted him to solo. That's it.
Yep.
I didn't want him to worry about parts or, you know, Spencer. I just wanted his love on it in certain spots, and that's it. You know, Doug took care of everything else.
Yep.
You know? That's very nice.
Yeah. Well, by the way, I mean, there's also George Evans, who's a guitar player also, but he's not on the track, but...
Right.
I mean, yeah. I got some great cats.
Oh, you did.
You know, not only Luke and Landau, who are some of the best cats around, but, you know, guys like Doug Bossi, you know, unsung heroes.
Oh, he's amazing.
I like using guys like them, you know.
Yeah.
And Doug also let me use his studio where I did the drum track.
Yeah.
I owe him a lot.
That's awesome. But you also used the young and talented Jordan Silva, who's also worked with Maroon 5, Kelly Clarkson, I mean, Smokey Farrell, you know, Weezer. I mean, he was engineering for you. How did you connect with him? And because the guy's got some definite chops.
I connected with him when I was working for Rick Rubens for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his engineers / producers was a guy named Ryan Hewitt. And Jordan was working for Ryan at the time, so that's how I met him. So then eventually Ryan moved to Nashville, and I don't know if he's still working for Rick, probably not. Ryan moved to Nashville, and when I started doing the project, I was like, this kid knows his stuff. I think I should grab him. We did a couple of things. I mean, he was so into it, you know, and so fresh, and his mind and his energy were so new and fresh and ready to go. Plus, he had the knowledge of hanging out with Rubens, you know, and Ryan Hewitt. He had their teaching.
Yeah.
So, I mean, man, I had to grab this kid. I had to. He was the only guy, I could think of.
Yeah. And David Collins, he mastered the album for you.
Yes, he mastered, and he did an excellent job.
Yeah,
it
sounds great.
Wonderful, wonderful job.
Yeah.
Everybody just gave their heart, you know, their hearts and souls. And, I mean, there were some guys that wouldn't even take money. I said, no, I just want, you know, the pleasure of having my name on the first Lenny Castro album.
Oh, yeah, that's so cool. That's so cool.
So, you know, I mean, this whole album is really just from friendship and love.
Yeah.
And from all sides, you know, not only from me and my love for music, but my friends around me too.
Well, this album definitely shows a lot of the love, because like if you just said right now that some of these guys wanted just to hop on, just to hop on your first project here.
Yeah.
And, you know, did they contribute anything else other than the playing? But did they give you some advice or stuff like this or whatever? Because, you know, first time out, you've been in this industry for a long time, but still in floating your own boat. What else did they contribute to the learning process?
You know, I played with all these guys for a long time, so I knew exactly who I was dealing with when I was sending stuff out. You know, to Jimmy Earl and to John Pena, you know, I played with these guys a lot. I knew exactly what guy to send what to, you know, and just told them, just sprinkle your love on it, man, and enjoy it. I think everybody just had a wonderful time. Guys like Ricky Peterson, man. Ricky Peterson was like, this stuff was so fun to play, man. They had everybody who's played on my stuff has really enjoyed playing on the songs.
Yeah, well, it's neat. Well, we love how you sort of framed the tracks. on Hands of Silk and Stone with your instrumental tracks, which are strictly your percussive tracks, and mm-hmm. which is Hands in Silk Part 1 and 2. Now, you know, they're gorgeous. They really are. And these tracks are wonderfully mic'd. And if we're correct, you mentioned that they're recorded by Keiichi Ito in Tokyo.
Yeah.
So tell us, how did this all happen, Lenny?
It was, you know, a friend from a friend to a friend. I was out in Japan last year working with a group called Love Psychedelico, and I was out there for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Actually living in Tokyo, and it was, I had such a wonderful time. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable. The concerts were great. So I basically had a lot of time on my hands because a lot of the concerts were on weekends. And some weekends I just, you know, didn't have any concerts, and I'd have like 2 weeks of just hanging. So I would book myself, or people would call me up, people would find out, you know, do a session here. I started working with a pianist by the name of Yayoi,
mm-hmm.
Doing duets. And so she took me into the studio. We went to record some Bach. It was for conga and for a keyboard, for acoustic.
Hmm.
Hopefully that will come out sometime. I'm not sure if she's what she's doing. But anyway, she introduced me. The studio we went to was Kim Studios. And so I had everything there. So while we were doing the recordings of the Bach, she asked me, well, do a couple of solos. And Ito was like, yeah, just to play some stuff. And so I just played a couple of solos, and he kept them, and he gave me those copies. He gave me the copies of them. So I decided, yeah, I got to have these on the album.
Yeah.
So it was by sheer accident. And also this man, Mr. Ito, is also one of the technicians that helped develop, like, the A-frame drum. And also I think he has something to do with the wave drum also. The guy is just a technical genius.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you talk about microphones, ridiculous.
Tell us about that, because, you know, we know that, you know, the miking in the studio had so much richness on the performance. And
he had a lot. You know, first of all, I had some incredible drums. So let me start there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a gentleman out there who is a drum tech who works in Tokyo a lot, Mr. Usami,
mm-hmm.
has a personal collection of gongas that are just beautiful. I mean, he keeps them in great condition. And so he allowed me to use these six gongas, Galaxy Giovanni's.
Mm-hmm.
And these things were singing. And once we got them in this little studio, and the studio, of course, is what do they call it? Fine-tuned. It's mathematically sound. It's just one of those. And it's not a very big room. And his mic collection was amazing. I couldn't tell you exactly what he used because I'd never seen a lot of the stuff. But he just, you know, he had fun, you know. I always tell engineers, this is your game. This is you.
Mm-hmm.
This is your way of expressing your creativity on how you're going to mic me. Let's see what you do.
Yeah.
And this guy just had a ball.
Yeah.
He said, man, I got Lenny Castro. I got six great congas in this song. Let me just do this.
Yeah.
And he was tweaked.
What we love about the prod, those two tracks in specific, are they're not only rhythmic, but they're melodic. And you know, the way you bend the skin notes on part two is really beautiful. It's masterful, and just the quality of the recording and the instruments that you used. I mean, it's gorgeous.
I'm very lucky and very blessed. Believe me, I mean, I was lucky to be at that place at that time with that keyboard player who introduced me to Mr. Ito.
Yeah.
You know, it just worked. It just, you know, gift from God, or I mean, kismet, or you know, name it what you want, but you know. The dice fell in my favor. So
yeah, it did.
Well, kind of on the tails of what Eddie just said, you know, generally speaking, you know, we think of hand percussion or any percussive instrument for that matter is sort of an mm-hmm. element of the timing and the groove of a song. And, you know, and what I love about listening to your conga solos is how deep you can take these instruments. Eddie referred to them as melodic, and I would agree, but they also communicate, you know, a lot of drama, a lot of passion, and, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of intrigue. And tell me about, now you may have already answered this because you said that you laid down those solos and that's what you ended up using. But I was, before I knew that, I was going to ask you about the writing process for these solo tracks, or were they just solos?
There is no writing process.
It was just a free form performance, right?
what do they call that, stream of consciousness?
Just a free form.
You know, you just relax, you sit back, you enjoy, you know, clear your mind, and it's like whatever the first thing that comes from your mind is what goes down.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
You know, there's no preparation or anything like that. There's more preparation on mics, you know, on setting up the congas and setting up the microphones than anything else.
Yeah.
Once that, we get the sound and the headphones are done, I just go.
Yeah.
And I tap into that so-called stream of consciousness.
Yeah, that's what I figured, yeah.
So you've been endorsing LP percussion for quite a while. So my question is, on the Giovanni Palladiums on the congas that you borrowed from Usami, what's the nuances, Lenny, of what those congas sound like as opposed to what you typically play? What are the little nuances? How can you describe that?
It's a matter of personal preference. I like the big drums. I like those big. Yeah. They're big and they're long. Mm-hmm. Plus, they make that's the only line I think that they have that they make four different sizes. They make a super tumba, a large one, a really big one. So there's actually usually there are three sizes, but in this line they have four sizes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great because, like I said, it includes that super tumba. You have conga, you have quinto conga, tumba, and then super tumba.
Yeah.
And that really goes down, kind of extends your register.
Yeah.
You know, it's like having the, Borsendorfer 9 foot with the extra bass keyboard.
just the nuances.
And they just, I like the word, and like I said, the depth and the body of them is really big. And I'm a very heavy player, so I need something that's really going to project and going to be able to take
what I
put out.
Yeah,
you know, I played them for a long time, and I really love them a lot. They have a really good, rich sound about them.
Well, we want to dive in and we want to talk about some of the tracks on the album, the first one we want to talk about is Slinky. It's, you know, it's kind of a straight up rocker. You know, you drive the keys, the drums, the percussion, and you've got Ricky Peterson on organ.
I kind of renamed that one because I wasn't sure about the name Slinky. I'm calling it Slinky Strut.
Slinky Strut.
Descriptive of what I was going for. But I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's all right. Well, I mean, it's good to know. I mean, this is a real funky piece, and it has George Evans playing a key melodic role in the lead guitar. And can you describe what you had in mind and what you ended up with in the course of the recording process?
Man, you know, there was very that went on as far as, like, I just sat there and just said, well, who can I get? Who's a good funk guy, you know?
Yeah.
And then on top of it, you know, I got Ricky Peterson on it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you know, it was just a matter of just deciding that who was it. There wasn't much of a thought process going on, to tell you the truth. Yeah. You know, I just said, well, this guy sounds great for it. I think this guy's good. And I just threw them in, and that was it. You know?
Yeah, sure.
Very simple. It wasn't anything complicated,
yeah,
as far as,
yeah,
I can.
So tell us about your keyboard playing and your synth playing. I think it's going to be a surprise for our listeners. They're saying, Castro is playing keys.
My two-finger keyboard
playing? I know, what the heck is going on here? So what we want to know is, you know, how long have you been messing with them? And did Paige help at all along the way? Or
yeah, you know, I play a little bit keyboard. I have classical training. You know, I took theory. I went to music in high school. I went to Manus College. So, you know, for ear training and for theory and stuff like that, learning keyboard is mandatory. You got to know something.
Right.
And also, you know, for composition, you know, for writing purposes. You know, so I know a little bit of keyboard here and there.
Yeah.
But I always kept it kind of quiet and just to myself.
I got it. But so on that note, on the follow-up would be, you know, what, you know, there's so many synths and keys out there. Did you focus on any synthesizer, any digital keyboard as your main axis for?
No, I just used whatever sounded right,
mm-hmm,
whatever sounded to me.
Yeah.
That fit the part.
Gotcha.
You know, mm-hmm, like, you know, for instance, I mean, that tune Big Meat, if you want to go to that song,
yeah,
those two synth solos,
mm-hmm,
those are me.
That's cool.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
There's two synth solos in Big Meat, and at the end it's a guitar and synth thing,
yeah,
that goes back and forth.
Yeah, because you were going back and forth
with are mine, you know.
Yeah.
I tried to replace them, but my solos sounded so great that I just said, I'm going to keep them.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
But like I said, I didn't, I really didn't focus on any one keyboard or anything like that. I just went with whatever sounded right to me, whatever brought to me what I wanted.
Yeah, know? And while we're talking about it, the Big Meat, the track is, you know, it's very much almost a prog rock type of piece that Doug Bossy comes in with his heavy guitar tracks. And
I take that as a really big compliment.
Oh, it is. It really is.
That's the side of me I don't know if I should talk about.
Oh, I don't know. your drum performance is awesome. I mean, you were crazy on that thing, you know, the way you bring this track to an end with, and I can say the decrescendo of the bass and the percussion at the very end after a very active track, I thought it was nice treatment.
I just kept everything. I told my engineer, we're keeping everything, you know.
Yeah.
These days, people like to hear that stuff.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. Right.
People talking in the background and stuff. I'm always doing some screaming somewhere, you know. but it's, you know, people love to hear all that stuff, the after effects stuff. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting, you know. But it was nothing that I planned. What laid down stayed down, and I just left it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, another track is El Tres, and it has the piano parts starting out. Which that was that you or Neil Larson playing that?
That's me.
Okay.
That's me playing the lead acoustic part.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we've talked about this in a little bit because obviously this is the one that Luke did a solo work on, and the other guitar parts were Doug Bossy, correct?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, since we're talking about the song El Tres, let's check this one out because, you know, as we mentioned, Steve Lukather laid down as Lenny called the sugar, and we want to take a little listen to this. So here's a sample of El Tres, and this is from our guest today, Lenny Castro, from his brand new debut album, Hands of Silk and Stone, on Inside Music Cast. And then moving on to English Funk Fry, and
no.
I got to tell you, this is one of my favorite tracks, and this is, you know, kind of a slightly up tempo jam that features Michael Landau on guitars and Jimmy Earle on mm-hmm. bass. You've got Neil Arson yes. on keys, and of course yourself. And I dig some of the chord progressions on this track. And just tell me how this one came to be.
This one was kind of, when I was writing this one, I had those English funk bands in mind, kind of a thing, kind of like Incognito.
Yeah.
I just had that kind of in mind when I started writing it. I said, oh, it kind of feels like one of those, you know, English funk bands
type
of situation. So, you know, with the constant bass drum on it, you know.
Yeah.
It just, that's where basically what I was thinking when I came up with that one.
Yeah.
When it started writing itself, it kind of started sounding like that. So that's why I call it English Funk Fry.
You know, it's an instrumental track, but maybe since, you know, we should get Bluey over here to put some vocals on it.
It's right. Yeah. Hey, man, I hope somebody picks up this song and writes some lyrics onto it. It's at least some funny shit.
Now, the next song we're going to talk about is a song you mentioned earlier about writing lyrics, and the name of this track is called Ain't That Some Shit. And
yeah, I know. Wow. Explicit language.
And this track features, you know, our good friend David Garfield on the Whirly. You've got Jimmy Earle on bass, Michael Landau, and yourself.
Uh-huh.
And this is the first track on the record, at least in the sequence that I heard them, that includes vocals. And of course, you're on lead vocals, and you sounded
lead
great.
Lead vocals, man.
And
thank you.
And I think, you know, we've talked about Doug Bossi playing guitar and Jordan Silva was your engineer, but those guys sang backing vocals on this one.
Doug threw them down because I went and did the lead vocal at his studio.
Uh-huh.
He's the most gracious human being known to man. I love him dearly, and I owe him a lot, let me tell you.
Yeah.
But I went over, and I did my vocals at his place.
Okay.
And so when we were listening to it, we got the lead vocals. And yeah, and so Dougie said, you know, it'd be great to have a little chorus thing, you know? And things were kind of, we were getting late in the album, you know, and uh-huh. I didn't know if I could hire a background vocal. So Doug just put down a rough two vocals, you know, two tracks of vocal.
Yeah.
We left them in, and then at home, my engineer threw down a couple on his own. And it sounded fine. So then I threw down another one, a third one, underneath him.
Yeah.
And kind of mixed them in real nice, you know, and we had background vocals.
Yeah, there you go. They sounded great.
Well, one thing's for sure, if me and Rick would have been there, we would have won our vocals in there, too. What the hell?
No, you guys would have been there, too. Are you kidding me? I need some doo-woppers. What are you talking about?
I got to tell you, Lenny, you don't want my vocals on there.
Come on. We always need finger snaps and hand claps.
I can do that.
We'll find something for you to do.
Gee whiz.
But I studied percussion for many years, so I'm not quite Lenny Castro, but I did. That was my thing. But I got to ask you, though, about the lyrics on the album. And you mentioned Joe Sample, but tell me how you came up with the lyrics and what's the story behind
it? Oh, man. Well, it was weird. I just started writing these stories. You know, I figured, was it my wife who told me? Was it my idea? I forgot, man. But anyway, I just started writing these stories. Actually, you know, the lyrics were a little bit more serious than that. You know, I was more about, you know, the condition of the world and what we're going through and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, nah, that shit's too heavy. So then I started writing these little stories about me and Joe. The first one is basically, you know, we were on the road. We pulled into a hotel in Northern California. And the place was packed. We didn't even get, you know, the parking lot was packed. And so, you know, there's, like I said, like on the song, you know, this little group of little hippie girls, they were like 18, 19, 20, but they looked like they came straight from the 60s and 70s. I swear to God, they were third generation hippie girls.
All right.
They came over and they knocked on and they said, we're looking for Jerry. I said, Jerry?
Garcia.
And then it just so happens that I remembered that Grateful Dead were playing in town.
Oh.
So these girls were looking for Jerry Garcia, and they thought our bus was his bus.
Yeah, I'm Jerry.
Well, a couple of guys in the back were screaming that, believe me. You know. Me and Joe were in the front, and we said, no, I'm sorry, wrong band, you know. So who are you guys? We're Joe Sample. Who? And Joe looked at me, and Joe goes, ain't that some shit, man? Look at that. So that's basically where that came from. That came from Joe. He used to say that all the time. You know, ain't that some shit? Look at that. Because me and him ran really close. I mean, we were buddies. We were running buddies, drinking buddies, running buddies.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, played great music together. I mean, I had an incredible relationship with him.
We miss him so badly.
I'm very, very thankful for. He motivated me to do things that I didn't think I could do.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
You know. Well, going back to the lyrics, the second verse is about our first time eating fugu, which is, you know, Japanese blowfish.
Right, right.
So, you know, we had never eaten it before, and we found a nice place. I think we were in Fukuoka, uh-huh. which is southern Japan.
Right.
We found the nice place, and me and Joe always went out to dinner and tried stuff together.
Yeah.
We love to eat. And so I remember, you know, they brought it out, and it was beautiful, and we just looked at each other like, oh, my God, we could die. I don't think so. This is good. And then, of course, stuff. Joe's like, "Eat this some shit, man. Check it out." I'm the biggest fugu fan now. I mean, every time you know I go back to Japan, which is almost every year.
Yeah.
Me and my wife, you know, that's like you know one of the main things. That and onsen, you know, the Japanese spas, mineral spas. Mm-hmm. They're over. I love those.
Yeah.
I love those. But that's basically the lyrics on it. Just a couple of anecdotes about Joe Sample.
There you go.
And the title just came to it. That came with it. Ain't that some shit? That's something that he said all the time, you know.
Well,
and that's a guy who's seen a lot in his day. He saw a lot, you know.
Yeah.
He saw so many changes and so many things, you know, coming from the South. But I don't want to get, you know, too serious about it. Yeah.
I think it was.
He was an amazing man. And like I said earlier, he brought some amazing things out of me. Mm. You know.
I think it was about a year before he passed away. Eddie and I had him on the show, I remember we got on the phone with him and we were introducing ourselves or explaining, you know, the show and how we do it. And I kind of got the vibe, and I think Eddie did too, that he wasn't quite sure who we were and he wasn't quite sure what kind of interview it was going to be.
Yeah,
and I remember
no idea.
The first couple of questions, he was kind of felt like he was treading water with us a little bit. But then we did something and it sparked him, and it's like he was a new person, and he like perked up, and we got through the interview and we spent like an hour with him. And when we were finished, he goes, "What, that's it?
That's it." He wanted to keep on going. He wanted to keep on going.
Did you mention like barbecue or something?
Yeah. you got listen to
barbecue. That opens him right up. I mean, his barbecue was just fantastic.
Wow.
You know, I mean, he had a place up in Mammoth, and it had this big, beautiful barbecue outside that had this cast iron lid that needed a counterbalance. It was so heavy. And of course, he had his flag of Texas on the top, you know.
Yeah.
And he'd start early in the morning getting the wood in and shoving it to the back, and you know, the whole process. And he'd get this. He would send from, I think it was Stix Hooper's dad made this base, this barbecue base that he'd sent to Joe. And you know, Joe loved to cook. I mean, he loved the food and he loved to cook himself. You know.
Yeah,
we had so much fun together. I missed him a lot.
You should check out our interview. I think you'll get a kick out of it.
I'm definitely gonna have to look for it.
Yeah. I'll shoot you the link.
You have to send it to me. Yeah.
Well, you know, guys, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't take a listen to a little bit of this one. And this is the track that Lenny, of course, just mentioned that sort of was perpetuated by his, you know, relationship over the years with Joe Sample, and the title track is spawned from a line that Joe Sample would say all the time. This is "Ain't That Some Shit." And this features Lenny on vocals, as you mentioned, Lenny. And here we go. Let's take a listen.
In front of our hotel,
We've got a few more tracks to talk about, and one is Osaka Blue, and this is kind of a laid-back groove that features Michael Paulo on sax, and Jean Payne on bass. We've got Neil Larson on keys, Doug Bossi on guitars, and there's quite a bit of synth on this one, too, which I'm assuming were your parts, right?
Yeah, there's this one little kind of droney thing that almost sounds like a trumpet or a flugelhorn in the background.
Yeah, right.
I found, you know, basically, this tune is based around that sound. Okay. When I found that sound, and I don't recall how, it was probably something on GarageBand. It was kind of a droney, kind of a droney kind of thing, and that kind of motivated me or kind of inspired me to create more on top of that.
Yeah,
pretty much. And then, like I said, it evolves from that kind of really mellow droney sound.
Yeah,
you know, and just one thing as it works, one thing leads to another. And then basically the picture towards the end when I started writing, when I was finished writing it, I was like, wow, this kind of reminds me of Osaka, you know, Osaka at night, Osaka Harbor.
Yeah.
Just, you know, that's my second home out there. So I love that place a lot.
Yeah, the very beginning of the track, though, there is kind of a nod to sort of a, you know, kind of an East Asian sort of feel to it right at the beginning.
Yeah, it's got a kind of a thing. I didn't want it to be too, give it too much of the foot, just enough to give you the hint of it.
Right.
Know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, another.
But yeah, Michael Paulo did a beautiful job. He's another one of my old buddies, you know, that I've known for such a long time. And I knew he was going to be perfect for that one because he's got that nice, mellow sound. And he blended it really nice with the vibes that I played on that. I used the vibes for the melody, and I knew he would be perfect just to play along with that melody right alongside of it.
Yep,
it worked out right. It worked out perfect.
Yeah.
He did a wonderful job.
It's beautiful.
Another track that has a really nice vibe. In fact, sort of a Los Lobotomies kind of vibe is a nice deep track. It's a deep groove that features Larry Klimas, and it's called Third Avenue L. And
yes.
They're very nice, inspirational track.
Yeah, that one, David Page helped me with that.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he's on there. He came, it's so funny because I sent it to him and I told him, I just want some keys, you know, some acoustic. And he didn't listen to me at all. He decided he wanted to play organ, and then he kind of rearranged it. He put four bars in the beginning, and then he came up with a melody. And when I got it back, I was like, well, this is almost a totally different song, but I like it. You know, I mean, who am I to say David Page's stuff is not happening?
Exactly, right. You know? Exactly, right.
He's got the golden touch. And I was like, you know what? I'm leaving this the way it is.
Yeah.
My shit was... Now, I don't even remember what it sounded like before he hit it. And he came up with a wonderful, melody and the organs that he put on. There's actually a lot of organs on there. There's me, there's Larson, and there's him. So there's a lot of organ on there.
Wow.
A lot of stuff.
Very cool.
But he put like a gospel-y thing on it, man. That's just, just, man, just took it to a whole different level.
Taking it to church.
Beautiful.
Hey, so we've talked about every track on the album. Almost every track, that is.
Almost, you're missing one.
And as you're listening to the album, you know, it grooves, it jams, it's funky, it rocks. And then we get to a track that totally does a 180, and a song that I feel is the hit on the album.
It is the hit.
And it's called Honey Song.
Honey's Song.
You know, this is
this is
60 seconds of pure bliss. It's guaranteed to put a smile on anyone's face.
We have been joking around about that song's going to get all the attention.
Well, you know, like I said, it'll put a smile on anybody's face, and this is a song.
I got a funny feeling that's going to be my next career, is doing kids shows, man.
I mean, man.
I don't feel too bad about it. There's lots of gold in them there hills.
There is, I know.
Well, in case people...
I can do a lot worse, right?
Yeah, well, in case anybody's listening and they don't know who Honey is, this is a song about your dog. And the song is sung by your wife.
Yeah, Tia.
Yeah.
And also my dog is singing on it, too.
Yes, your dog does vocals
That's
on
right.
it, yes.
Oh, hell yeah. You kidding me? She's not cheap, too. Let me tell you, man.
So at the very beginning of the song, you hear a ruff? You hear like a
yeah, that's Honey.
That's Honey.
That's good. I thought it was you, like, doing a dog sound.
No.
Yeah. I'm just playing it. I have no vocals on it. Just my wife and my dog.
Oh, that's so great.
I do drums. I do sound effects. I played some piano on there. Reggie Hamilton played the acoustic bass.
There's some slide whistle.
Slide whistle in there.
Wait, Vaudeville's not dead, okay? It just smells that way. Okay.
I kept on replaying it, man. I kept on replaying it. I loved it.
Happening. You got to keep them slide whistle companies going, man.
Oh, yeah.
It's only 60 seconds, and when it's done, I thought, wait a second, I want more.
I know.
So I kept hitting, I put it on repeat.
That's a song about, let's see, about 7 years ago, we moved into this house that we're living in now.
Yeah.
And we got Honey. She basically adopted us.
Uh-huh. That's what happened.
Because she was living next door with some friends, and they already had a dog. So she wound up digging holes in our fence to come to our backyard. One thing led to another, and, you know, it was like after a couple of months, 2 or 3 months of her showing up at our back door, it was like, okay, we got a dog.
You got a dog. You know?
So we took her in, and my wife would bathe her and sing this little song to keep her, you know, relaxed.
Yeah.
And I would hear this, you know, I'd be in the living room with GarageBand, right? I'm sitting on my lap. So I just thought, I just copied the melody.
Yeah.
You know, and then eventually just put some chords on it and then put the little, you know, B part. And That's how it all came about.
You know, it's funny.
It's my wife's song.
Yeah, you just mentioned that, and I was going to say that I got the feeling like this is one you really didn't have to compose, because I had a feeling it was something you probably already sang. You know?
Yeah, well, my wife was singing it. So.
It was the pet song for your pet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, what the hell. It was born with the rest of the song, so I said, it's part of me, it's going in. Why not?
Oh, you know, Lenny, when I listen to the lyrics, you kind of get the shaft on one part of it, because there's two lines of the lyrics that say, she likes Lenny, she loves music. So she loves music, but she only likes you.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. The honey,
the psychic.
Honey,
say that.
Oh, she loves music. We got that. We took our dog to an animal psychic, and she basically told us she likes music.
Was that Chie right there?
Yeah, that was my wife. Yeah.
Hey, Chie, we need to ask you a question. We need to ask you a question.
We took Honey to the animal psychic person, and then, you know, she always come with us wherever we go, you know, concert, rehearsal.
Uh-huh.
And then she says she loves music, so Honey said that.
Wow.
Yeah.
I said, Chie, you did a great job on the vocals.
Oh, thank you very much. It's the first time to me.
Hey, Chie, are some of the lyrics in Japanese also?
Yes, some of the lyrics are in Japanese.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah,
we're trying to cross over, babe. You know.
I know.
I told them the story. Right.
Well, so what we have here is not a Lenny Castro album. What we have is a Castro family album.
Well, you know. Everybody's included.
That's so great. That's so nice.
I'm glad Chia could join us. That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I think since this is only a minute long, Lenny, let's stop for a second. And you know what? Let's play it. The album's already out there. It's on Spotify. So let's go ahead and just play this track just to give our audience a little sample of this little gem that you and your wife, Chia, have created. And this, again, is Honey Song, featuring Honey, the dog, on Inside Music Cast.
Honey's a good girl. Honey's a good
I just love that. I've listened to that so many times now. That's just awesome.
I know.
So I guess the big question is how can everyone get their hands on this album?
Well, like right now, I'm trying feverishly to get this thing done. I'm going through TuneCore.
Okay.
So TuneCore is going to put it in iTunes, I think, Apple Store. There's a few other places, but yeah, that's basically where it's going to be. There's a few other internet stores that you sign up for. There's a whole bunch of them. So
yeah,
it should be. Yeah, that's basically what I'm going for. And then hopefully in the very very near future, I'll have some CDs pressed out, and I'm hoping to have some to sell when I go on the road with Toto.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, I'm hoping to have some. Like I said, I'm working feverishly to get these done.
Well, good.
Yeah. To get it uploaded into TuneCore, and then I have to send the stuff to the CD makers and have them press it up. So.
Yeah.
Wow, it's a lot of stuff to have to do on your own. Let me tell you.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is a lot. I can't imagine. And then you got to promote it, which is what we're here to help you do. So
yeah,
we're going to spread the word and keep it.
And I really appreciate it, guys.
We're excited when we heard you were doing this. So.
Oh no, we'll do our best to promote this to all of our listeners. They know who you are. So
there's one or two people who know who I am.
No, there's a lot of people, and they're going to be excited that you're releasing this project. So congratulations to you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I hope people like it. You know, it's just. I just want them to have a lot of fun with it, you know, just like as much fun as I had recording it, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's just something that's been on my bucket list for a long time, and I'm just finally very grateful and thankful that I was able to do it, you know. All the guys that helped me record all this stuff, everybody was just, you know, the outpouring of love and support was just overwhelming.
Yeah, that's great. You know? Well, we support you too, and we're excited for it. And hopefully,
I do thank you guys. Thank you so much. Hey, I appreciate
just
it.
Just before we close, the rest of 2018, you're going to go back out with Toto.
Yes, we're going out. We leave the 30th is the first gig in Vancouver. We're out for about a month.
Yeah.
Then back for another month or a month and a half. And then we go back out. We do the East Coast.
Yep.
And then we come back, and then the end of this year, December into January, after Christmas, we're going to do Australia and New Zealand.
Okay, great.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well,
that's as far as what I know so far. But the boys are still, you know, we're up, we're all going out. We're doing it.
Awesome.
Well, good for you.
Well, I'll see you on August 17th in Nashville. I'm going to go down to that show.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, the Ryman.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I'll be down there for that one.
All right. That's fantastic. Okay, you guys, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Lenny. All right, take it easy.
Take care, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay, man. Much love to you guys. And I can't tell you how appreciative I am.
Hey, not a problem.
We love you, man. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Okay, love you all too, man. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Special thanks to Lenny Castro for joining us on this episode of Inside Music Cast. We'd also like to thank our correspondents, Brian Pearson, Kim Riley, Scott Gross, Mikhail Engstrom, Don Brightup, Scott Sheriff, Loretta Sassaman, Yinka Oyelese, and Arnaud Legere for their continued support and content development. Inside MusicCast is powered by Earshot Audio Post and Caveo Associates. Inside MusicCast Radio is back and is playing West Coast, AOR, jazz, pop, and funk, and is streaming now at InsideMusicCast.com, TuneIn, or download the free apps for iOS and Android devices. For Eddie Caveo, I'm Rick Such. Thanks for listening to Inside MusicCast and Inside MusicCast Radio.